everyone. Yes. Welcome to another episode of Writer's Process Podcast. I'm Colleen Tidd, and I'm here with our host, Jonathan Moody, tonight. Jonathan, you want to say hi to everyone?
Hey, everybody.
And then we have a very special guest with us tonight. Super excited to have this man on our podcast. You may know him from Magnificent Seven and Crazy Lake. My favorites are Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You. We have Rob Mello here. Hey, Rob, how are you doing?
Hello.
I'm so happy to have you on here tonight. It's one of my bucket lists to be talking to you.
What? Really?
It is.
I'm a bucket list?
Your movie, the Happy Death Day movies, are the first movies that my son and I bonded over. That's a horror film. So that was his first horror film that he watched
really?
With me in life.
I didn't know that.
Yep. So thank you for that.
I'm glad I could do that. I've heard that quite a bit, actually. You know, it's like a first date. You know, right. and that kind of thing. And I just, it's really, it makes me duck my head in honor. I'm very honored to have been a part of something that was part of so many lives.
It really was. Mm-hmm. But I mean, and those are just a couple. I mean, you've been involved with acting since 2014, I saw, right? You've been doing everything from, like I mentioned, Magnificent Seven and Paths of Darkness, Recipe for Murder, a little bit of everything, TV shows like Outsiders. So you're well-rounded in the acting industry.
For years, I just studied and shut the fuck up. Because I didn't know what I was doing, and that's what I tend to do. It's when you don't know what the hell you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I like it.
Chill and sit back and pay attention to those who know. And it's kind of like in the 80s there was a Vietnam show. And there was, you know, the Sarge, and he was grizzled, and there was the Lieutenant, and he was young and impressionable. And those who lived shut the fuck up and paid attention.
Probably relevant for all aspects of life, especially nowadays. It's great advice.
Well, nowadays, so many people don't do that, I feel like. I feel like so many times people think they know what they're doing or whatever, act like they think they know what they're doing, and they really don't. So it's really refreshing to hear somebody who does say, if he doesn't know what he's doing, you know, that he shuts up, listens, and...
No idea. No idea. I had no idea, and shut the fuck up. When you don't...
There you go. Tell us, how did you get into writing? Like, was that a passion of yours?
Always. And it's funny. Yeah. That's the second passion. I never actually wanted to be an actor. I never actually wanted to. It just kind of fell on my lap, and you know, I look the way I look, and you know, the powers that be say, "There you go." But I was always interested in the story, and telling the story, and. All right, I'll lie. It was a means to an end. It's always been a means to an end. Mm-hmm. And And it just so happened that I've got this face and this demeanor. And it just happened. And so you roll with the punches, right?
Right. And I'm sure it helped. Yeah, go ahead.
But the, didn't mean to interrupt, love.
Oh, no, you're good.
Fuck it. You know, if I've got to act to get to where I can tell stories, because I know so many incredible storytellers that will never be heard of. That, yeah, like, history will absolutely forget them. And you both know 10,000 of the same fellows. And it's just...
It's true.
Why did I get this little slice of limelight? Yeah. So, what was the question? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you answered that perfectly.
Yeah.
Perfectly. Now, and it probably, you acting and loving the story and having more of the passion for writing made you a better actor, if you ask me, because you live the story instead of just being on that surface level. You absorb it when you love the story along with the acting. So, I mean, it shows in your work.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Acting, in when I started acting and getting into horror, I spent a whole damn day just drilling the fuck out of,
You're good to curse. Yeah. It's fine. It's a rated.
Okay, cool.
You know, this is not PG.
I drilled the humanity out of me. And I mean, I watched African torture videos. I mean, I watched, I watched the most horrific shit, you know, beheadings and just like
real shit.
Oh my.
Yes.
Like, it just, I mean,
the shit that we do to each other, that we can do to each other. And I watched it in order to, because I'm a very empathetic fellow. And I realized that in order to be that guy, mm-hmm, I couldn't be me.
You had to have the heart of a mind.
I needed to rip that piece out of me. And about 3 hours in onto the dark web, I could feel my soul leaving me. And I cried to my wife. I was like, baby, I can't fucking do this anymore, dude.
Right.
And she said, stop. Get the fuck away. Mm-hmm. So I did.
So you had to leave her?
I closed the fucking laptop and it was hard, man. In order to be that motherfucker. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you bring that to your writing too? Like, do you feel like you have to do that, go there when you write?
It's writing is so much harder. It's so much more impactful because it's like once you get the idea, you know, it's your fingers can't fucking stop. It's like fucking.
Mm-hmm.
And like for a Tin Roof, like, people, I don't know. It's like a, fucking 80 pages in 4 days.
Holy
and
hell.
People are like, oh my God, wow. Not, that's fucking 20 pages a day. No.
Hey, I can do that.
Right.
I mean, right. I'm with that's, you. Yeah, right. once you're in the zone, man, don't stop.
Oh yeah, I'm the worst procrastinator ever until I start. And once I start, it's 40 pages in 2 days.
And, right. Yeah. And it's the ding, and it's like the visual of Dumbledore going.
Yes.
I actually, okay, nobody knows this about me. Like, I don't think I've ever said this on any podcast before, but I've actually, I think it was like my second or third script, I actually wrote in 1 day, you know, 80 pages in 1 day. I have no idea how the fuck it happened, but I was just like, I was there. I was in my room. I was like, yep. This is
no distractions at that point. There's nothing. I mean, there could be a plane crashing outside and it wouldn't distract me at that point.
You know what? It wasn't the internet back then. It was 2002 or three, you know? So like, there really wasn't this, I don't think MySpace was a thing for me back then. So like, really all it was I was there. I was in the zone. I was not, you know, and that's the thing, right? Like distractions and Rob, you could probably talk about that too, right? Like distractions when you're like dealing with real life or just people messaging you. I mean, it sucks when you're kind of there in the zone trying to get things done, right?
Well, yes.
So how do you avoid these distractions? Because it's true. There are, yeah.
Well, being to avoid such things, it helps being a mean looking prick.
It helps. You just tell people to fuck off and
well, and you know, I'm half Irish, half Italian. And,
same. Oh my God. First person I've met, I've always said I'm half Italian, half Irish. Horrible combination. I'm a mean drunk.
Oh, no. Madam, no. No. Bullshit. Bullshit. It is the best combination.
I love you for saying that.
Because how beautiful are you?
Well, I've got the Italian nose and then the Irish skin. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's, I wish I would have gotten the, that's true. The jawline is there. Yep. Check out right. That jawline on you. Yeah. Yep.
Right.
I didn't even realize the jawline was the thing.
Not just me, dude.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. All right. So I need to appreciate this crazy combination.
The Irish eyes are smiling, monkey.
I love it. I love it. All right, we need to get together. You need to teach me some better comebacks then for that. Because I always say I got the worst of the book.
Other than die, motherfucker, die. what was the question?
Well, just how do you deal with distractions? Yes. You know, like if somebody people messaging you on Facebook or people calling you on the phone or whatever, do you just you know, how do you handle that as a writer?
Good question. I'm a doer, so I generally tend to knock everything out as it comes. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you're good. Yeah.
Okay. I generally tend to nail shit as it comes, and so the primary focus is the story, and really the only one that I've saw to completion was Tin Roof. I've gotten 130,000 words. I was thinking about this talk earlier, and you know, thinking about writing and you know things like that, and 130,000 words into a fucking novel, and I stopped. I couldn't do it anymore because I fucked up. I didn't map it out. So I stopped.
Yeah. We talk about that a lot, mapping out the storyline. If we have those storyboards, if we don't, what to, you know, and I feel like every writer has a different way of doing it. But I do agree. You need some sort of basis, but I'm less of a mapper. I just write as I go. So.
I like those roadblocks. I like those like obstacles, you know, you have to go back and fix or whatever, you know, because to me that's a lot of fun. I don't like mapping things out because I change things. I'm very ADHD. So when I start writing, I'll change things all the time.
This is true. But you need a basic road, and I know I smell what you're stepping in, dog, but you need a very basic road, and it's rudimentary and it's fine if it's just fucking I'm you know the arc of the story, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
right,
That's what we're going to follow, and you can adjust as you wish, but to get the damn thing done is the fucking crux of the issue, and that's where I've always had fucking problems. And I've got 10 terabytes worth of stories, just little snippets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I pull from.
Well, you know, Colleen and I co-write together, right? So we actually, it's funny because I do this differently, and we can actually go into talking about co-writing because you've co-written with Rebecca, I believe. So, you know, you've got a little, you know.
That's the first time.
First actually. Time. There you go.
I've actually co-written with anyone.
Yeah. So what we generally did was, I mean, this is what I do. This is different than a lot of what most people do, period. But I'll like write the first half of something and then I'll give it to the other person to write the second half. Sometimes they'll go and correct things or change things if they need to. But most of the time, if you're on the same page, you know, and I would actually map out the second half of what I, you know, kind of, you know, interested in showing. And most of the time that's works, and yeah, it's a different way of doing it.
That's an interesting way to go about it. That's not how we did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Generally people lock themselves in a room with, lots of coffee and cigarettes or whatever. I don't do that. Cause generally I have people that are in other states that work with me. So I don't, you know, it's harder to get together unless I could, you know, do that.
It's definitely easier if your other is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think
she was right there.
Yeah, and I think Jonathan and I got really lucky just because when we met, we realized from my previous writings and his previous writings, we have very similar writing style, which meshed surprisingly well. Because, yeah, I feel the same way. I don't know if I would recommend it to everyone to do one portion written by another writer and vice versa, but somehow it worked for me. And it worked perfectly.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Very little things that need to be changed as far as the transition of writing styles.
But see,
and in, you know, there's ego.
Right.
No, there's ego is a big.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Especially in writing. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Ego is a big fucking thing, man. And, it just, I don't know. I'm just very, very happy that I, from start to finish, wrote you know, this.
Yeah.
And but it wasn't just me, you know, and she was here like every piece of the fucking way, you know, and like every little piece of dialogue and, you know, little snippet of smart assedness. What do you think about this? And yep, every chunk of snark.
Well, good. Yep. So yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, to go back to the co-writing thing, I think if you're going to be in a room with somebody, you know, co-writing the idea, then, you know, sometimes there is a little bit of a struggle because both you and the other person might have different ideas of where to go. Like, I mean, what you look at, was it Good Will Hunting? Was it Ben Affleck and Matt Damon mm-hmm. both did, you know, or was it a lot of people joke that Ben was the one who just wrote this, you know, wrote it and fucking, you know, Matt was the one who told him what to say, you know, whatever, but it, like, who knows? Like, both of them may have been together just talking it out, figuring all that, you know?
Smoking a bone and fucking talking.
Yep.
Yeah, just like talking it out. Who knows? But it could, you know, most of the time there is usually like one or two, you know, one person generally who has more of like the one idea and the other person has the other idea of how to do it, if you know what I mean. Like it's a
co-writing. Well, this being the only, I mean, I've tried to work with another fellow, which, by the way, guys, you really, really need to check him out. His name is Ken Lennig.
Okay.
And
Ken Lennig.
Amazing. Yeah. But this is the only one that I've actually seen through to fruition. He's my literary, he's my literary guru. We've got some thoughts on the matter. But yes, Ken Lennig is basically he's Woody Guthrie.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah.
He's the literary Woody Guthrie to me.
Aw.
That's a huge compliment. Ken, if you're listening to this.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's incredible.
So
those words kill fucking fascists.
What? So tell us a little bit about how your what is your process when you write? I mean, you talked about a little bit of just getting down and writing, but is there like a you know, do you write during the day? Do you write during night? Do you not? I mean, do you have a specific, you know, thing for it? Do you drink a lot of coffee when you're writing? Like, what is your, you know, general process?
For Tin Roof, it was kind of I fucked up because I didn't know the genre.
Oh.
And luckily, Rebecca was on this end of the table, and I was on this end of the table. And she was editing the one we had just shot, and I was writing the next one. Mm-hmm. And so the story goes that, no, that's how it goes. I went into like a fucking 10-minute tirade, man. And it was just like, you know, ooh, boo, 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 boo. You know how ideas pop, right? Mm-hmm. And she's just sitting there like this. Big old shitting grin, right? And to her credit, she didn't say a word. And when I was done, I was like breathless and, oh, what do you think? And she's like, you just told me the entire story of Friday the 13th.
And you had never seen Friday the 13th?
I had. It just didn't occur to me.
So I have a very similar story to that. My husband and I, we like to go back and forth with ideas. And as a writer too, you would think, oh, you've watched these movies, you've seen them, you know what the plots are. You've got to be original, right? You've got to write something different. We came out with this entire plot line one night. We were having a couple of drinks on the deck and we start talking about awesome story ideas. By the end of the night, I was literally taking notes. 3 hours into it, we realized we wrote Fight Club. that was my mistake.
I will say though, Fight Club and
Big old grin. Big old grin.
Yeah,
that
because,
would mean
because like from jump, the motherfucker knew what I was talking about. And but she gave me the space blow. And when I was done,
good.
And that's why she's an incredible fucking filmmaker.
Yeah,
that's why she's going to be.
Exactly.
She's the best one that you've not heard about
yet. You know, which we will. So yeah, well, you know, that's interesting. Now I want to see a Fight Club Friday the 13th movie together. You know,
can we combine the two ideas and make it their own? Right.
You know, like
Fight Club meets Friday the 13th.
Like somebody is killing people at a Fight Club. I mean, I'd watch that. I mean, there you go.
Everybody
has machetes, but nobody's allowed to talk about machetes. Yes.
You find out Jason is really Freddy the whole time. I don't know. Let's throw in some.
No, that's funny.
We can spitball this.
There we go.
Yeah. We would need to spitball this.
Now we'd have a problem because they're not making the Friday the 13th movies because of that stupid lawsuit that's going on right now. I mean, you know, it's not stupid.
What?
No, don't
I didn't even hear about this.
You guys don't know about that? Yeah, no. Apparently there was a law that got passed that after 35 years, the owner of the original script gets their rights back, you know? So Victor Miller now owns the rights to Friday 13th, and he is now, you know, and he sued or something, or went into some kind of court thing with the producer, Sean S. Cunningham.
Let me get I'm going to get the fucking... Yeah,
you're gonna get Rebecca here. Yeah, she's the friend. She's the
fucking Encyclopedia Brown. I'm gonna square this shit away. Right?
Yeah, we need her to join.
I swear, a Friday the 13th Fight
That's
Club.
Crazy. That would be badass. I would love that.
I would go crazy in that.
Have you seen the ones with Jason Brooks in them?
Is it like a fan film or something?
It's kind of. I think it's a little bit on a larger scale. I mean, it still fits that category of fandom, but it's a larger production.
Are you talking like Vengeance or something, or not Vengeance? Something
was
like that.
Was it Vengeance? I can't remember now. I'm terrible with all the versions there. But Jason was at one of the Comic Cons I helped out at, and he was phenomenal. But yeah. All right, we're talking Friday the 13th. Yes.
We were just mentioning Friday the 13th.
I've been called in as an expert witness.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were talking about the lawsuit that Victor Miller had, you know. So you know a lot about that, I'm sure, you know, or whatever, that Victor Miller was basically, I guess he's suing for, back pay that he didn't get from... Yeah. From doing the original, you know, or whatever. And now he owns the rights to the you know, to the movie itself again. So, you know.
So, and it's still really sketchy, but I mean, Victor Miller wrote the original script for Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, the script that was written actually didn't include, there being a son named Jason who drowned, and that was what caused a Pamela Voorhees to, you know, kill. Mm-hmm. Now, the whole idea of Jason coming up from the lake at the very end, that was inspired by, like, Harry Manfredini and Tom Savini and Sean Cunningham seeing Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that stinger at the end of, like, Amy Irving's at Carrie's grave and the hand comes up. So they all kind of had that, like, idea. So really, yes, Jason is on film, you know, mm-hmm. in, like, that little drowning recap. Well, Victor Miller, after kind of there was, like, a moratorium on certain things, he was like, you know what? That's my character. Jason Voorhees. Mm-hmm. is my character, and I deserve a very large chunk of the money for it.
Right.
And
understandably so. Yeah, I get that.
And I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But he also has systematically, like, stopped everything Friday the 13th from happening.
Well, and if you don't mind me saying this, I think a lot of it has to do with, because I've interviewed Victor back in the day. And when I interviewed him, this is like 2008, so this is a while back, the biggest thing he said was that he did not, he did not create Jason as an adult with the hockey mask and all of that stuff. That wasn't him. He had the mother, and he was not actually happy with the fact that in the next movie, which he was not the writer of, that they went that route, because that's not where he would have gone. He would have, actually, I don't think he would have done any sequels because he cut off the villain's head, you know, at the end.
Okay, but Tom Savini was the same way. He was like, we killed Jason. I'm not coming back to part two. And mm-hmm. he came back for part four.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Jason Voorhees, the mythos, the character, the, you know, sack head, you know, mongoloid, to the sack head, to the hockey mask, to the, let's take him to Manhattan, let's throw him in space. None of this is the work of one person.
Mm-hmm.
And no movie is either. And just because, I had to say this to somebody, okay? Mm-hmm. This is my analogy. I did have to say this to somebody. If you're in a group of people and somebody says, hey, I think we should have Italian tonight. Mm-hmm. And you end up eating Italian food. Mm-hmm. You don't get the credit.
Right.
The chef, that's a great Italian analogy. Food. Yeah.
One friend ordered it. Everybody made their right. So, I mean, just being the writer and having the, like, intellectual property. I mean, I know there are a lot of laws around that.
Right.
But the creation has come up of Jason Voorhees has been every actor who has played him, every writer, every director, every person who has been killed by him.
Now,
he's not just one person's entity, and what Victor Miller has done. And Victor Miller used to do, like, the con circuit, and he used to do all kinds of stuff mm-hmm. until the moratorium came up, and then he figured he could sue and get money.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, he could have had a percentage of something, and now everybody has 0%.
No. Right.
Right. None of the games can, like, keep going. Nope. None of the, yeah. None
oh
of
my
the
God. Are you kidding me?
No. And
no, and, I mean, it's all in it. And the thing is, it's not that he's won. It's that it's tied up in court.
Right.
Right.
So
and maybe in a year, maybe it'll be fine. But right. then it's like, but you've already gotten all this time where, you know, we've had all the stalemate stuff and not to mention all of the fan films that have been made.
Well,
that once all this is done, any of the fan films that have used Friday the 13th in their name, and there have been many, They may be subject to lawsuit as well, depending on who wins this. And really,
that's why she's my fucking director.
That's right. That's right. All right. For those listening, by the way.
Well, look. Here's the thing. It's because of a stupid law that got passed that said that after 35 years, the original writer now owns the rights to the movie. So it's not just Friday the 13th. We have not had a new Nightmare at Elm Street because they're tied up with Wes Craven's estate now owns it. So people who have no rights to who know anything about, horror.
Right. Right. You know what?
I mean, you know,
when it comes down to it, people are like, who cares about Nightmare on Elm Street if Robert Englund isn't coming back as Freddy? They don't care. But yes, right. Exactly. A lot of these things all come down to rights. And I mean, like, we all are in independent film.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I at least say Moody and I, like, that's.
And Colleen's been doing this for a while too for independent films as well.
So. And the thing is, a lot of stuff that we do is on a gentleman's handshake.
Yeah.
It really
absolutely.
Is. And 80% of the time, it all works out fine. And the other 20%, you end up losing a friend or you end up losing a script. Or whatever, and that's just what happens. And
that happens over and over again, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a business, you know.
Yeah.
And in business,
it is a business. But when it's at our level, and you have to think, like, you know, Friday the 13th Part 1 was very low budget.
It was only like $700,000 or something.
Yeah, and I mean, it was all like kind of stumbled upon. Sean Cunningham stumbled upon Camp Nobby Bosco, looking for a KOA camp.
Yeah.
My dog is whatever. But like, you know, and so like, you know, okay, so did he have the idea? Because he had the inception of saying he went to this camp and he was like, I'm lost. And he's like, this is a pretty cool place. Can I film here? So is it his?
Right.
Oh, right. Yeah, I mean, because is it the camp? Is it Jason? Is it?
It's camp everybody. You're right. It's everybody.
It's everybody. Yeah.
Everybody. It's everybody. And when you have a franchise like that, everybody has contributed.
Mm-hmm.
And for any one person to just be like, to take it and put it in shackles is really just a disservice to all the fans, all the people who've been in them, all the people who've worked on, all the hundreds and thousands of people who have created careers and lives and memories from Friday the 13th.
I agree.
Yeah. Wow, that's
really well. I love that. That's, yeah, absolutely. But and for those who, I don't know if we gave you a proper introduction for those listening. This is Rebecca that we have on right now.
Rebecca Reinhart.
Yeah, Rebecca Reinhart, director of Tin Roof and also co-writer.
I'm also very prolific on the Indie Film Cafe. So
I love it. Yes. So familiar. Yes. Familiar.
I am also a co-host on Sexploitation Sleazecast on this network. I also am Moody's co-host on 80s Horror on this network. So yeah, you probably have heard me.
People
and if you haven't,
you
need to listen to our other show. I just happened upon this podcast, set it up, and did not realize that it was part of the universe. And then I get a knock on the door like, hey, Beck, they're talking about Friday the 13th. Like, I need you to come in here.
you were the right person to bring in.
Yeah. No, we've talked about this.
Material witness, right?
Yeah. We've talked about this. If there's anybody that's going to tell us a little bit more about Friday the 13th, it's going to be Rebecca. She's a huge fan. So I get it.
Okay, that was a big segue. You can edit it as much as you want, Colleen.
I love the segue. No, that's perfect. Yes. But now that we have you here, we were just talking about the collaboration and the writing and how that works and how it works so well for the two of you. So do you have any thoughts to add to when you work on
collab? I'm not sure what he said, because again, I just got to knock on the door like, hey, we've got some fact checking on Friday the 13th. And
he said you are wonderful.
And I could hear you guys talking and I was like, are you still on the podcast? What's going on? So that is my jam. That is my, my love is camp slashers. Cabin in the Woods kind of thing. Not Cabin. I love Cabin in the Woods. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the whole concept of like Cabin in the Woods,
the theme of it,
out in, you know, the woods, camping, whatever. And really the camp thing. I never went to camp. And I really like, I always loved all that. Sleepaway camp, The Burning, all the Friday the 13th, you know, that whole genre. And so we did the Embalmers. And literally hours after, we were bullshitting. It was the two of us and Julian Prescott, who was also a frequent collaborator on this.
She's phenomenal.
And so we were all kind of bullshitting, and Rob was like, well, so what's the next movie you're gonna make? And I'm like,
what's the next idea?
No, you said, so what's next, boss, I think. And I was like, okay. If I'm going to do another movie, because the Embalmers was more psychological. The Embalmers was more psychological. It wasn't really my story to tell. If I'm going to tell a story, it's going to be a slasher. It's going to be a camp slasher. But I had two provisos. One I will not say because it's kind of a spoiler, but the other one was that I did not want the people to be super young. I wanted the protagonists to be adults, people with, and I think the exact words I used, mortgages, 401ks, beer bellies, kids, problems. Like people, like real people, not people going on spring break with mom and daddy's dime. And then a couple days later, because, you know, I mean, we were having our post Embalmers
celebration.
It was a good time to be had because, you know, we had mid fucking pandemic
shot a movie.
And
incredible. Okay. To do that.
That in and of itself is a fucking feat.
But a couple days later, he was like, because again, in the midst of the drink, he's like, I'm gonna write that for you. And I'm like, yeah, cheers. But whatever. And a couple days later, he was like, you had a couple really good ideas for movies. Do you remember what they're?
No. Pay attention.
No, but it took me a couple days and I did remember the stuff.
And it eventually so he came comes up back. Here.
Right, 2 a.m., it always comes back. And so he came up here, I edited the Embalmers, and he wrote Tin Roof. And he developed these characters that I'm
pretty good at back and forth.
And we're of a certain age, okay? Yeah. We're not exactly like 1920, okay? We're not babies anymore.
Yeah.
We ain't babies anymore. And so when it came to developing the characters and the dynamics and the dialogue, you know, it was, I mean, there was a lot of back and forth. Like he'd be like, okay, so Brian says this, and I'd be like, and it's not a big surprise. There's a character named Becca who is a little
has absolutely nothing to do with anybody.
She's not saucy.
Like, we're gonna be watching it now, seeing if we can pick out.
You said this morning, anything Becca says is a one liner is pretty much Becca. But we did it to where it could be very realistic. And so, yeah, I think it was like he wrote it. He wrote the thing. But I mean, the collaboration was there and like our personalities and our life experience. Sorry, we're in our 40s.
In the element.
Can I just say, I love this idea and this concept, by the way, because growing up, I'd watch these slasher films and I was terrified of them. And then I reached a certain age where I had my son and said, oh, I'm no longer the age to be a victim in any of these movies. I'm not afraid anymore. But I miss that fear. I still love those movies. Don't get me wrong. But now I watch them and laugh and they're funny.
Right.
So I'm excited to see a movie again where I can be scared again, where I could be like, oh, this could happen to somebody my age, an old lady.
These are people who are going back to the camp that they love to try to keep it open.
Save it.
So they're not like the, ooh, let's go to Camp Blood.
Right. Let's see if we can get into trouble. Yeah.
Exactly. These are people who are like, let's go back. They have very good intentions, very good experiences at this camp.
Mm-hmm. That's brilliant.
So would you say this is more like, what was that? What was that movie that took place? Like the characters were like in their 20s or so. Sam Raimi was Endless Summer. Would you say this is like Endless Summer meets Friday the 13th?
So the movies that I like, because my cast, this has come up recently, and we have Joe Castro is actually our effects artist, who is legendary.
Indian Summer. I'm sorry. That's that's a completely different movie. Endless Summer was a surf movie.
Endless Summer, I think, is like a comedy.
Surf movie, yeah.
Doesn't matter. Right. But you know, some of our cast who's maybe not like, you know, as into like, you know, same stuff, mm-hmm. they were asking like, what are some things that we could watch? And so I started listing off some things, and then Joe started listing off things. And, you know, Joe Castro tells you, watch this, but,
pay attention. Yeah.
I would say this is more along the lines of The Final Terror and Just Before Dawn.
Okay.
Which are not camp slashers. They are in the woods slashers.
Right.
Yeah, cabin in the woods slashers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The correlating thing is that those are like, I mean, Final Terror is not the greatest movie. It's kind of boring. But the whole idea is it's a group of rangers who that's their mm-hmm. job. And they, you know, they grab a couple friends, whatever, and they all go up in the woods. They're where they're supposed to be. And they're adults and they're doing their job. And that's kind of the appeal there. Just Before Dawn, they're all kind of in their mid-20s and the one guy inherits land that he's been to before. It's not some kind of, you know, hills have eyes, like, ooh, or whatever. He's like, oh, I've been here like 20 times, you know, like, and they end up in some peril. So that's more what I was going for, although I can't not say, you know, there's not inspiration for like Wake Camp, you know, Friday the 13th, 1 through 4,
mm-hmm.
The Burning, any of those things.
Well, it sounds like the whole process then is fun in itself, just kind of sitting around and talking ideas out and having a good time and laughing, and that's awesome. Like that sounds like, yeah,
no,
yeah.
It sucked. No. Having written it fucking sucked. I'm gonna.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Because it's. Oh gosh. Because in my mind. Mm-hmm. Had fucking 10 billion different fucking ways to tell the story, and I fireballed it, and
that's why I was here.
Nope.
Yeah.
And fireballed that, and nope. And
this is why collaborating is good.
Exactly. And Colleen is exactly right. This is why collaboration happens.
Yes.
Because you have like brilliant character tropes. You're like, I don't want these people to be this, or this. You know, I was like, hey, at one point, and I'll just tell the story.
Go, dude.
So I just like walk in here and he's like, I've got it. Okay. So like a couple decades ago or whatever, a kid got killed at camp. And now that kid's mom is the one killing everybody. And I'm like,
this is how the story
And then happens. I'm like, yes, That is a great plot of one of my favorite movies. You just described Friday the 13th, darling. And I let him go on for about 10 minutes.
Did he get to the part where camp counselor chopped off the head?
I didn't, you know, because there might have been a nugget in there, whatever, but I let him go. And I was like, okay.
That shit-eating grin went.
Like,
just a big smile.
Kind of 12 different copies of that movie over there.
Oh, God.
But that's a good thing, because there were a lot of things that I wouldn't consider like character tropes that he would.
Yeah.
In like a normal movie.
Right.
Like, I mean, I'm just looking at the tropes of horror. He's a lot more he's so much more well-rounded about film than I am. Like, I mean, not that I don't like other genres, but I'm kind of moody.
You're a horror chick.
Moody. You know? Yep. I get it.
Her fucking encyclopedic, if that's a word.
If
booty
not, you
drive
just
booty.
Yeah,
I don't know. Really, like, if we went toe to toe on 80s slasher movies, you would win hands down.
I got my money on fucking Becca.
I have my money on Becca, and I'm going against her.
I feel like we need to see this happen.
Okay, and Moody, I just got this.
Oh, God.
I know,
oh, God.
This is an audio thing. I just gotten this in the mail.
Oh, the Boogans,
VHS of the Boogans. Oh, no one on our podcast had seen the Boogans before. I suggested it, and everybody loved it.
Yeah, well, it's funny, because everybody said they'd come on, and then it was just you and me for that show. Because
that's the way it goes.
Exactly. Let me know when you guys do the early 2000s. That's what I'll try. I'm terrible.
He said, Beck, we need to pick not a slasher, and it's your pick. And I'm like,
ooh.
Well, because we had just done like nothing but slasher.
Like,
you know.
Like, he thought that was gonna be a big challenge for me.
Right. No, you got this.
You got
every damn bit of
let's let Colleen.
These two of you seem so much fun. Oh, we love you guys too. Seriously, like, you two seem like so much fun, and you can tell the passion in your voices as you talk about your writing and your concepts and process. And I love it. This has been so enjoyable.
Oh, it has been. Absolutely.
So thank you both for taking part of this.
Especially like Rob. You know, like, I mean, just the stuff that you've been saying earlier about your writing and everything has been like on the nose perfect of what we needed to hear. So we really appreciate everything you said.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's weird, because without structure, you can't front to end finish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point, I think.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's not. But for me, Tin Roof, I wrote that fucker quick as shit, because the notion was in my head, front to back, and it was structured, you know.
Yeah, and so did you have like cute cards or anything, like index cards, or did you just kind of do it, in your head?
No.
No, but we will for the shot.
No. It was in my head, and it involved a lot of caffeine and rum.
Nice.
There we go.
And what really, I wasn't in here for earlier, but really what it all came down to is it's a merging of, I really love those camp slashers, and I never went to camp except for like Girl Scout day camp. He went to camp and had that very East Coast experience that we see in all of those movies. Like, I think East Coast camps were a certain thing.
Okay.
No, because a lot of the movies that we like associate with camp slashers, they happen on the East Coast and they all have similar stories, you know, that are passed down, you know, generation to generation. And you had the real experience. I had the fake experience. Thank you, Colleen.
It's a good combination. Oh, no, I was just going to see if there's some way we could get the song Hello Mudda, Hello Fada for the movie. I feel like that. You guys know that old camp song?
Hello Mudda, Hello Fada. Camp, hiya wata. I'm with you, girl.
That needs to play at some point. Like, this is when you said the East Coast camping experience, that's all I could think of.
I think the Dr. Demento estate probably owns that. But
yeah,
you know what?
Yeah, that might be a little bit hard to get the rights.
we're just doing fundraising to get the movie made.
So, yeah. So what are some plugins here? Do we have, how can people help with the funding process, and do you have a GoFundMe set up, or how does that work?
Well, let me jump in.
Yeah.
They could donate to Fish Heads, Roly Poly Fish Heads.
Eat them up, yum.
Or they can.
I love
so,
that song too.
For those of you who don't know me, I have been kind of a promoter over the years and somebody who has been kind of a champion of indie film, and I've helped with a lot of crowdfunding campaigns. And I've noticed that a lot of them have turned into dumpster fires. Mm-hmm. And they've turned into pre-orders for Blu-rays. And then I got involved with one for myself, for the Embalmers, and I ended up my kitchen table, you know, a few thousand dollars later, sending things off to people, I realize that's maybe not the way to go. So we are on Indiegogo. It's igg.me/@tinroof, or you can just search for Tin Roof. We are the first one that comes up with Tin Roof. We are doing a different approach with a slow and steady kind of campaign. So we started with executive producers, and the whole idea of being an EP on an indie movie anymore has been cheapened. $50, we're gonna slash this, you know, whatever. Yeah, like some kind of like used car lot kind of thing.
Let's go, Buzz.
So we said from the get-go, we are going to accept 6 executive producers at $750 each. You get a day and a night on camp with us and that credit. And this will not be slashed later. This will not be extended. And then we kind of went and we got a lot of backlash. Kind of tried to explain, no, this is about being part of the movie. And the physical perks are very expensive and very time consuming for the filmmakers. So our perks are based more on the immersion of the people. So then we went to a $600, be in the movie, we'll give you a couple lines, you can stay with us, hang with us for a day, because we had the whole camp, stay with us a day, we'll feed you, all that jazz. That was, that went gangbusters.
I bet. Who wouldn't want to jump on that? Heck yeah.
But we also had, like, we had somebody from Australia who was like, well, I can't make it to Indiana, but I'd love to do something. And it's like, okay. So I set something up for him to where he can do something like, you know, remote on TV, you know? And so
it's a lot of shit.
And so we're just kind of, you know, the next phase of it is going to kind of go around Joe Castro, our effects guy, and being able to follow him around as he does things, go to his studio. Work. So the idea is it's not tangible stuff that we have to send to people, but stuff that people can't get if they're not on a movie set.
That's
what we're trying to deliver, and that's what we're kind of banking on. So we've had a really good 24 hours. Really good 24 hours.
Follow Joe Castro in his fucking shop.
Yeah, Joe's the man.
Joe is the man.
I've had him on my show, like just doing a regular interview with him, and he was fucking just one of the nicest guys amazing, I've ever talked to. And
he's so fucking great and just so willing. And the only reason that I even considered him, because I mean, most people are like, he's going to be too expensive. I watched a movie that was like a $5,000 budget movie, Lake Michigan Monster. I don't think it's out yet. It's still making the rounds in the film festivals. And I watched it, and then at the end, you know, and it was just so low budget, and I just loved it. And at the very end, it was like Creature Effects by Joe Castro, and I ended up interviewing the director, and I was like, how in the fuck you get Joe Castro? And he's like, listen, we had like no budget. Everybody was like his friends. They filmed it on like one of the actresses' cameras. It literally, like, they're in a lighthouse that they like just, everything is just very like rudimentary.
He's very open.
But they wanted, if it's going to be called Lake Michigan Monster, they wanted the monster to look good. And he just threw something out on Facebook, and he was like, hey, are there any effects people who would like be willing to do this? And Joe fucking Castro, he had no idea who he was. Joe's like, I'll do it for $1,500.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And that's and that's when I'm like, oh.
Holy shit.
Okay.
Yeah. Joe's just a really, like, you know, and when he delivers, you know.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Oh, no, he does not half-ass anything. No.
So he's kind of, in a way, would you say he's sort of like the Tom Savini of now?
Yes.
You know, right
and,
now.
And that was kind of like, Rob didn't know who he was. And like, and I kind of, with the whole Lake Michigan Monster thing from Nightmares Film Festival, I kind of figured, I might be able to afford Joe Castro. he's like the step below like Savini or like KMB, like, but he can do a lot of stuff for a lot less money than those guys. Not saying anything about KMB or Tom Savini, love those motherfuckers,
right? But when you need something in a certain price range,
he's still rooted in, I want indie horror to look good, and I'm making a living out of it, and it's cool.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. Greg Nicotero would not be able to afford him at all. But yeah, Joe Castro is super fucking awesome, and we can afford him. And because he is that awesome, we can afford him.
Nice. Nice. Well, it looks like you guys have some awesome names attached.
He can fucking do what we need him to do, and so show these people fucking what we want.
Because you know what, and on this this point, this is the last thing I'll say about Tin Roof, and then you guys can wrap things up. So with Tin Roof, I am a huge fan of the camp slasher and slashers and horror and I'm not even gonna reiterate all that stuff, but what I can say is that we are finding the best resources that we can, and we are making it very interesting. We have a great cast, great characters, and we have great kills, and that's, I mean, if you're looking at a slasher movie, you can't really ask for more than that.
That's what makes a great slasher. I'm excited to see it.
Well, thank you, Colleen.
Well, we appreciate you guys both being on the show. Mm-hmm. And you guys just plugged, I guess, what's new. Like, what is going on with the Embalmers? What can we expect to see that out soon?
Okay, so The Embalmers is out. I have a box of them on my kitchen table. So the best way to get a hold of it, I'm probably not going to put it on the festival circuit or any of that. The best way, if you want to get a hold of it, is to join our group on Facebook, The Embalmers. You'll know because you'll see like his head going.
yeah, my big ass head.
So I'm self-distributing at this point.
Okay.
I'm just self-distributing. So
say why. We had to say why. I could not. It was a non-union shoot.
Oh, gotcha.
Anyway.
Yeah, well, I'm joining the group right now.
I do have a lot of I have Blu-rays and DVDs for sale at my kitchen table right here, like where we're all sitting. Hey. All
right.
So $20 for the DVDs. I don't have many of those. $30 for the Blu-rays. PayPal me at Rebecca_Reinhart@yahoo.com and I will send you one. Or just join the group and all that's in there.
Awesome. Yep. I just joined the group as we were speaking. I'm excited to get my hands on that one. So yeah.
I have to buy one too, just to support my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Moody.
Like, I don't know why I thought you were gonna put it out like somewhere else. So I was gonna wait, but now I'm gonna do it. It's gonna happen.
Now Moody's gonna support me after I introduced him to the goddamn Boogans.
Exactly.
Now he will.
That movie was great. I want a DVD or Blu-ray.
Movie was great.
Just drop the fucking mic, yo.
Well, thank you.
Just drop off the planet, yo.
All right.
This has been the funnest group. Are they still there?
I'm sorry to photo bomb.
I'm saying.
It was like magic.
Fuck off. Yeah.
She's Rob gone now.
Rob put his hand in front of the screen and she disappeared. It was okay. There we go.
And I have to say, well, yeah, I was doing my mic drop moment. But I do have to say, Colleen, I'm a showrunner for a lot of things and I horribly, horribly apologize for the editing you have to do on this.
I'm actually editing it and it's
not going to be edited.
Moody, I don't give a shit.
Yep. It's not going to be edited at all, by the way.
This all is perfect right. As is. As
I know. I love the way it was, period. So,
yes.
You know, yeah. You know me.
Yeah.
You
know.
We need to Sorry. Do this now. I was brought in I was brought in for testimonial and then I just
Well, you know, and Colleen had actually messaged me and asked about, you know, because I didn't know you guys are that Rob was staying with you at the time. So I didn't know. So like, even though I think I did know, you did tell me this earlier. You know?
Yes, because this is the reason why I couldn't do our 80s tour because
next week,
he was coming in that day and I was supposed to watch the fucking movie and do a podcast. Yeah. And give this one ibuprofen. No, we got it worked out, man. We got it worked out.
Yeah. No, we're all good.
And we all got to hang out tonight. And yeah, we need to do this again in the very near future, even if it's not for the podcast. But you guys are awesome.
I can't wait to work with you, Rebecca. You know that. You know. And I'm sure I'll end up working with Rob too, you know, at some point.
Gotta happen at some point or another. We're all in that same, yeah.
She's fucking amazing.
Well, I am.
She's pretty amazing.
I agree. I just met her and I already feel that way about
Charlotte
her.
I am Charlotte Gunn. No, yes. I am Charlotte Gunn in Supernatural Assassins when we get all that.
Oh, yeah, okay. Now, see, I knew you looked familiar when I saw you.
Now,
yes, it's all coming together now. I'm like, the name was familiar, the face. Oh,
so good. All right. Well, thank you guys so much. Yes. We really appreciated this conversation and getting to know you guys. Rob, getting to know a lot of your quirks on writing and everything. I love it. You know, like I love hearing all this stuff. So this is why we created the Writer's Process podcast, is to learn more about, you know, what people do differently. And I love that, you know, so we really appreciate that.
Thank you.
And you got a little more than you bargained for. So
even
thank
better.
You everybody for listening.
All right. And everybody, and thank you, Colleen, for running this show. So we really appreciate that.
Thank you for having me once again. I love being a part of this. So thank you.
All right. And have a good one, everyone. Bye.
Have a good night.
Bye. Bye.